Welcome to the Eric Anders Lang Show, everybody. A little hot. Turn it down. Robbie, how you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Yours is good. All right. Levels are set. Robbie, when you think of yourself...
I already love where this is going.
I feel like this is going to be one of these podcasts where we just have fun for an hour.
Perfect.
What do you think of as your most defining characteristic? Like if there was one word that followed your name, Robbie, Robbie Amell, is that how you pronounce it?
Amell. Yeah.
What is that word that follows your name?
Patrick. It's my middle name.
No, but I mean, like, is it like Canadian actor, golfer, extremely symmetrical?
I'm a hockey player who acts for a living.
Really?
Yeah.
And, so, wow.
And don't play enough hockey anymore.
There's no hockey in LA.
I do. I play in a men's league at Pickwick in Burbank.
What is Pickwick? I don't
know. It's like it's a hockey rink / bowling alley.
Is this my next like thing? am I about to go do adventures in hockey?
It's great. It's a good rink. It's a ton of Canadians and East Coast Americans, guys that played in college.
Okay.
And you get some pretty good games. They've got four levels from like beginners up to guys who, you know, played in college and, right, and are pretty good. But it just keeps me busy. All my buddies who I grew up playing with all have their beer leagues in Toronto because it's huge there.
That's one of the only things to do in Toronto.
I mean,
what else would you do?
You can golf in the summer. We've got good golf.
If you're Sean Mendes, you have a whole. Isn't he from Toronto?
Yeah. He's one of our...
Are you friends with Sean Mendes?
Never met him.
You don't look that dissimilar.
I'll take it, sure.
You're older than him, though.
Yeah.
It's frightening how young Sean Mendes is.
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy to be that famous and that rich at like 20-something.
Like 21.
One, yeah.
How old are you?
30.
You're doing pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't complain.
You got a nice car. Really, I saw your car. Oh, it's thanks. A nice car.
I'm car obsessed, so... I have a nice car. I just sleep in it.
I mean, that's a good car to sleep in.
Yeah.
We'll leave it unknown for those listening. They're wondering what you're driving. They probably think it's like a McLaren.
It's not.
It's not a McLaren.
No.
But you don't sleep in your car. You're married.
Yes.
Because two of you can't sleep in the car.
No. Well, that one we could. It would just be really uncomfortable.
Right. It would be... it might be a statement, though. You could definitely make some type of statement. But you're married to a fellow...
Italia Ricci.
First of all, she's Canadian.
Yes.
Second of all, her name is Italia.
I know.
These things are fascinating to me.
And people are like, are you Italian? And she has to bite her tongue and be like, no, I'm French. So she's like, yes, I'm Italian. Her grandma's name is Italia, so she's the namesake.
Okay.
And her grandparents are from Italia, or from Italy, moved to Canada. Her parents were born in Canada. She was born in Canada.
Okay.
So she's third generation.
I'm going to fix my mic, and while I do that, I want to make sure everybody knows that, Robbie, you love golf.
I do. So I've grew up playing. My dad, my grandfather, my dad, my great-grandfather, they all played. I grew up playing with my dad. I'm really glad I played at a young age because I don't know if I could handle it if I just picked it up, you know, a year ago. I have a few buddies I grew up playing hockey with who picked it up in the last few years, and they love it, but they all wish that they played when they were young.
Yeah, me. That's me.
Really?
I was 30 when I hit my first golf ball.
Oh, good for you.
I don't know. I mean, I know that there are a lot of people like me and a lot of people like you, right? And there is some difference, but there is... For most of it, I find an intersection. Like it is just sort of a different way of being in love with something.
Sure.
I don't know. I mean, I think when you start golf when you're older, you are less likely to. I think it seems like the people that start it at an older age are more likely to find some really sentimental solution in the game. Do you know what I mean? It seems like they get really sentimental about it. Like me.
Sure.
I'm incredibly sentimental about my golf. I get on the first tee and I cry.
Before or after you hit the ball?
Unfortunately, like, I think all of the above. Like, during, before, and after. But I mean, like, when you play golf at a young age, it's just golf. And it's just your way of living. But when I find golf, it's almost like Amazing Grace.
Actually, you know what? I completely understand that.
Yeah. Because it didn't save my life, golf. Well, who knows? Maybe it did. But golf definitely fulfilled a very adult need, which was, I don't even know what it is yet. It's only been 7 years.
It's a nice game that you can play into old age as well.
Right.
You know, it's, which is odd because of the toll it can take on your body if you're somebody like Tiger Woods and you swing, you know, 125 miles an hour every yeah. time you swing. But, you know, it's one of those things that as you get older and you're looking for time killers, you know, when you're into your 70s and 80s, you can't go out and play hockey. You can't, you know, there's some contact sports that just aren't going to work. And then you can go spend 4 hours. Essentially, a friend of mine describes it as you get to walk around a beautiful park for 4 hours and do something while you're there.
Yeah, I can't tell you when the last time I walked around a park for 4 hours is.
Exactly.
I don't think ever.
No.
Like Central Park, I'm trying to get through that thing. Even though it's beautiful, I'm like, I got to get somewhere.
You just bring a bag. Just like, you bring your golf clubs.
A shag bag?
Yeah.
I think I've seen that before. I think,
sure.
I feel like you can get in trouble for that.
Definitely.
What? So you get into golf, you're 7, is that what you said? How old?
I was probably, I mean, it's as long as I can remember. I want to say probably 5 years old. Mm. But just, you know, my dad would take me out to the range with him, hit some balls. And then my dad has been a member at a golf course in Toronto for as long as I've been alive.
Medium course?
Yeah. It's just sold. It was called York Downs. It's still there, but it's a 27-hole track with okay. more property than that, and it was in an area that's just the real estate got too valuable. So
right.
the course sold, but we have it for another year or two. So my dad's been a member there since I was a kid. I joined as a junior member, and it was my off-season sport. I played hockey all year round, and then once the weather got nice, my dad would take me out golfing. If the weather stayed nice into October, November, he would pull me out of school occasionally.
No way.
Yeah, he pulled me out of school.
Robbie's not feeling well.
Yeah, exactly.
No way.
There was one, he pulled me out of school. I had a broken wrist at the time, and I had my wrist, I can't remember which, I think it was my left, but I can't remember. I had my cast molded with a hockey stick in my hand so that I could continue playing hockey.
No way.
So I could also continue playing golf. So my dad pulled me out of school. We played a little executive course, and on the 12th hole is a 63-yard par 3. I worm burned a ball right into the hole, and my dad hadn't had a hole in one at the time, and right before it goes in, he goes, "Oh, don't go in." It smoked the pin and it dropped. And he's had two since then, but he was like, "You can't tell anyone you had a hole in one because you were sick today."
That was his line.
Yeah,
that's so funny.
It was great.
You know, Craig T. Nelson had a similar story about he was playing with his son, and his son was having like a lights out round of golf, and he was talking about how like he was sort of as a competitor wanting to beat his son, but as a father wanting his son to play well. Oh. Anyway, it was pretty. We have a video of it.
I love that.
Everything good, Colt? Colt's trying to secretly enter the desk. Colt. Oh, my wallet. What are you doing with my wallet? You going shopping? don't go and buy one of Robbie's cars. I can't afford it.
Do it.
A little pink slip. So anyway, yeah, we're all golf here all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You must have freaked out when Happy Gilmore came out.
I still love Happy Gilmore.
I mean, how could you not?
It's my favorite Adam Sandler movie.
It's the story of your life.
My favorite. I remember taking Happy Gilmore swings if I was having a bad round.
The running.
Oh yeah.
It's quite difficult.
Yeah.
It is an athletic
and
move.
And it never goes that far.
Never.
I
think I've one time hit it pure, but maybe I should practice it more.
There you go.
Yeah, it's a hard move.
The trick shots I've found on Instagram and YouTube have gotten to the next level. Mm-hmm. Like people bouncing shots to each other. And
who's your favorite trick shot? Do you follow any of these guys?
No, I mean it all pops up in my, because I search enough golf stuff. It's like the golf feed that just goes yeah. through.
All you're going to, the only recommended content for you is golf feeds.
It's, yeah.
You don't follow that many people. You follow like 130 people, I think. Is that what I saw?
Do I?
It's low.
I don't know.
Maybe it was 320. It was extraordinarily low. I was proud.
For the most part, I only follow people that I actually know.
That's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And some comedic accounts. I don't know all of them.
Do you have millions of followers on Instagram.
Almost millions.
You have 1.7 million. Yeah. What is that like? I mean, do you, because you're actually, your Instagram personality is super chill. I love the one where it's you and your wife in a pool. And what's the caption? It says, we've gotten to the point where we put a phone on a towel and take a picture of ourselves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When you're married, you stop caring. You don't ask. Yeah. There's no shame about people sitting around on a pool. You don't want to ask them. They're on vacation. So you just do the prop a phone up on a towel and it falls over a few times. And then you scroll through all of the pictures and your wife finds one that she likes and it was a success.
Then you're good to go.
Yeah.
So are you the, because your wife's actress.
Yes.
Did you meet on set?
We met shooting a movie in Toronto called American Pie Beta House.
Yeah.
And we call it the movie that changed all our lives and none of our careers. That's not to say it wasn't an incredible experience. I met my wife. I met my best man at our wedding. Yeah. One of my other best friends was one of the other leads. We shot in Toronto. The paycheck was enough to give me a shot at being in LA.
Okay.
Because it was part of the American Pie franchise, it came with enough, like press and little, yeah, I had a small role, but the name recognition of the franchise was enough to help me get my visa.
Whoa.
And move to LA and give it a shot. And what's amazing is I've worked with, a lot of servicemen and women, doing some movies, some Marines and some Army men, and it's a huge movie in the military.
Interesting.
And I think it's just because it's an easy, really easy watch. You can turn your brain off. You can laugh.
Yeah, they don't want to watch Zero Dark Thirty.
No, it's like silly college humor, and you're like, it's an easy watch. So it's really funny that I meet, you know, some of these guys, and they're like, man, you look familiar. I'm like, oh, I don't know, maybe this, maybe that. Like, no. He's like, bro, American Pie Beta House. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
That's what you saw.
That's the one.
Right. Like, all right. Because you look like you could be in the military.
I played a Marine once. That was really fun. Yeah. And I worked with, it was a movie called Max. And it was myself and another actor and 9 active duty Marines and Army men. Yeah. And we shot in a little rock quarry in North Carolina that they built to look like an Afghanistan village. Mm-hmm. And these guys were awesome. They worked with me on making sure I was like, just make me as authentic as possible. You know, I don't want anybody to watch this and be like, oh, what's he doing? This isn't how.
Right.
You know, to as simple as like, that's not how we carry our gun.
Yeah.
Like when we're just on patrol. Just small things.
I like how
that.
they hold it up to the chest, right?
Yeah, they hook it. They pretty much rest it on their on their flak jacket, because otherwise your shoulders are just gonna. You can't be walking around holding it the whole time.
Do you respect anyone more than the men and women in the military?
I don't think so.
I mean, it's hard. I fucking walked you into a tough question.
No, I feel like it's like all servicemen and women. You know, military, police officers, firefighters.
Yeah.
Like any kind of first responder.
Not quite TSA, but anything else. You know. I used to really respect the TSA, and then I found out that they just like, did you hear these stories about what they do?
No.
Dude, they would like fucking like full, like they can see your genitals and they would like go into the room and they would like talk shit. And then I heard a story about how like there was something in the room where they would go in the room and then they were like having sex in the room while looking at your genitals. And I was like, Jesus, man.
I got in the wrong profession.
But then, and there was like a whole like unionization of the TSA where they would basically go slower for Delta or something like that. Like, anyways, it's a total side note. Let's get back to golf. So
you're gonna have trouble next time you go through the airport.
Oh my God, they already don't. I got turned down for global entry.
How?
It's a long story. I was arrested.
Now they're
when
gonna
I was
pull mine.
Yeah, you're done. Do you do a lot of international travel?
Yeah, I mean, just because Toronto, LA, or Toronto, LA counts as international.
It doesn't
having
feel
Nexus
like it.
Saves so much time.
Yeah,
yeah.
Are they? I've been. Well, whatever. We can move on. When you travel, do you bring your clubs with you when you go other places?
I have a really, really great relationship with Cobra. long story short, I went into Puma to get a free pair of shoes, okay. and there was a bag of Cobras in the corner, and I was like, do you guys know Cobra, or do you have a relationship with them? Like, we own Cobra. I was like, I love to golf. And they're like, let's have you go out to Carlsbad. So my wife and I went to Carlsbad, and I got a full fitting out there. Mm. And my friend Rachel at Cobra has been amazing. She takes care of my dad and I. She sends us, awesome. You know, our clothes from Puma and our clubs from Cobra.
How long ago was the fitting?
This was back in like, this was 6 or 7 years ago. So it's been a great relationship. And so my old Cobras are in Toronto. So I've got a bag there. And my new Cobras are in LA.
Ooh.
So I don't have to travel with my clubs unless I'm, you know, going somewhere within the United States.
Right.
But it's awesome.
That's cool.
It's so great.
When you have the old set in at home, mm-hmm. your home, do you have to adjust to them, or is it easy?
A little bit. I mean, it's nice that they're the same brand, but the new ones are definitely, like, the new ones have the KBS shafts that,
right.
you know, feel a little more graphite-y than steel, even though they're steel. They're just a newer head. They're a little, there's like a 6 or 7 yard difference per club.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
I know. Well, the other one, I think more of it is the shaft than the head, but right. Those KBS shafts are really,
dude,
really sick.
I mean, I think every person, man or woman, maybe more men, aspire to the place in life where they can literally have like multiple sets of clubs all around the world. Just identical.
It's just convenient.
Yeah.
It's so good. I've thought about, you know, if I have a bad round in Toronto, I go, you should just buy the clubs here.
that's the solution. Like,
you have the free clubs in LA. Just buy the same ones here.
My clubs just got stolen.
No.
Out of my car.
No.
Yeah, I was having dinner at the 101 coffee shop, you know, famous location for swingers, right? And I like to frequent famous locations. No, it's just, I was late and I just needed something to eat, you know? And
backseat or trunk?
Well, I have an i3. So I have an electric, like a hatchback-ish. Mm-hmm. And so it was in both. It was in the back seat and the trunk. And the car was not locked because my dog was in it. My lady's dog was in it. And I have the motion sensor, you know, so the alarm would go off if I locked it. So I left it unlocked and I left the window open like 3 inches. It was the middle of the night. It was like cold. There's no harm with the dog being in the car. And I come back to the car and the glove box is open. And I was like, how did the dog get the glove box open? Must be smarter than I thought. And then Sam goes, weren't your clubs in the car? And I was like, I think so. They're not here right now. Clubs gone. And I was just like, really? What are you going to do with my clubs? They mean nothing to you. They're not. You're not going to get anything.
You should have driven around. Look for the guy carrying the golf clubs around the...
I did. I did. I walked around. I walked around and I noticed that I was filled with rage.
Sure.
And I didn't... Then I had one moment of clarity where I was like, I don't want to meet the person who has my clubs right now.
Yeah, that wouldn't end well.
It wouldn't. It would end like a movie. It would be like that movie with Michael
Plus,
Douglas.
He has the clubs in his hands.
Yeah, he has. And then they're all sweaty.
You're short a weapon.
Yeah. He's holding my weapon. I'm going to get jumped. And then, you know, I was just like, in a moment, it all flipped. And I was like, wait a minute. I'm like the luckiest guy on earth. You know, I don't pay for clubs. I'm just going to get new ones. And you know what? I'm just going to let this go. What clubs?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad you asked. I just got fitted at this place called TruSpec in New York, which is what they refer to it as a brand agnostic fitting company. So sure. They were like
UGP kind of?
Just like UGP. And actually, UGP is where I got it fit years ago for the clubs that I was playing that I don't have anymore. And I was considering getting refit there. But anyway, I was in New York. And UGP was, or I'm sorry, TruSpec was like, we'll hook you up. So they basically, M4 driver 3-wood with like some crazy graphite design shaft that's like, it's got like drawings on it of like space travel. And then a Gapper 3 hybrid.
I just tried the Gapper the other day.
It's pretty good.
I liked it, but I felt it was a little hybrid-y, like I was pulling it a little bit.
Well, because there's three. There's the low, the high, and the mid. So I have the low, so it looks like an iron.
Yeah.
I have the 3-iron low. Anyway, I mean, dude, let's just get into the Gappers. Do you get free Gappers?
No, I went with the, I was waiting on the Cobra version of the utility iron.
Okay.
So I have the 2-iron from Cobra. I took the 3-iron out of my bag.
Right.
So I go 2-4 through Gap.
That's the right. And anyway, then I got Ping i500 irons.
Oh.
Which I was like,
these not are the brand new ones?
Yeah. I was like, I'm not getting these. No way. The fitter was like, Doug was like, just try it. And I was like, fine.
So easy to hit.
But it was like, there was not a club that I could hit better. It just didn't exist. Even my old club, we compared it against my old, I had Mizuno's. Yeah, anyway, that was good. And then that was, and then I got Mira wedges.
Do they do, what are those?
Ooh, Mira, dude. Well, Mira, the Mira is basically a handmade Japanese golf club.
Oh, this sounds way too expensive.
No, they're crazy. They're like $300 a club. I went to the, actually, so have you seen Adventures in Golf?
Yes.
Okay. So the last episode of this season is coming up. It's going to be out. What does that say on that box up there? December 11th?
Yep.
December 11th is the Mira episode. So we went to Mira's spot in rural Japan and watched him make clubs. Dude, you're going to freak out when you see this.
That's awesome.
Robbie's looking at the syllabus of Adventures in Golf episodes. Totally just secret.
Drooling with jealousy.
Anyway, I'm the clubs haven't arrived, so I'm excited for that day.
What was Iceland like?
Dude, Iceland? Golf? Okay, for no joke, Iceland is, I think, one of the best golf destinations on Earth. It's not like the golf itself, the quality of the grass and stuff is unusual. It's different. I mean, it's a volcanic island that, you know, the grass has a slight hard time growing, but it's amazing. The sun is up 24 hours a day in the summer.
Yeah.
And the golf is just stunning. I mean, it's just they don't have the same regulations as we do as far as putting golf courses on the water. So you've got all these like pebble beaches, basically.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, with just huge mountains in the background. And the Icelandic people, have you been to Iceland?
No.
Dude, put it on your list.
I want to, yeah.
The people are super nice. They speak English. The food is delicious. Really expensive. But, you know, the golf is great. There's golf everywhere. And there's, it's a small
reasonable
island.
Flight from Toronto, I'm almost positive.
Yeah, WOW Air just takes you from anywhere. I mean, even from LA, you can do, actually, I don't know. But anyway, back to you, dude. You. What's the weirdest place you've ever played golf? It sounds like you like to travel.
What's the weirdest place I've ever played golf?
It could be a dead end question. You could just pass.
I don't think I've played anywhere weird yet. I've played in and around a ton in and around Toronto, the north of Toronto, like a cottage country. Mm-hmm. There are some really, really beautiful courses. Like rocks built into the landscape, like huge, huge, huge granite rock faces. Okay. It's really, really nice. And you can get some great distance off the bounces.
Yeah. off of the rock.
Exactly.
But wild. You don't know the direction.
No.
Right.
What's your
favorite course you've ever played?
I played Pebble Beach for the first time. My dad's 70th birthday. We went out last October.
Awesome.
It was great. It was so cool.
Pebble's cool because, I mean, it's a great course, but in some ways, it highlights your own life. Because you go for a birthday.
Sure.
Like, I went for my 30th with my dad and brother.
That's cool.
And, you know, I mean, that's what Pebble is. Pebble is like a bookmark on your golf life.
Yeah, it's a special occasion. It was really awesome.
Wait, so what did you guys do?
We played Pebble and we played Spyglass. It was my dad, myself, and two of his best friends from when he was a kid. And it was just amazing. It was so nice. The weather was perfect. We teed off at the exact right time to finish as the sun set on 18. Ooh. It was incredible. It was absolutely perfect. Then prior to that, I went to the Masters this year for the first time.
Oh, really?
Or last year, for this past year for the first time. So I guess actually it was after that. It was in April, obviously. But my buddy phoned me. His dad had tickets for the entire weekend. He's like, my dad can't make the practice round. And this was on Tuesday. I was like, okay, I'm booking a flight tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow night. We'll get a car. We'll drive to Augusta. We'll stay the night. Or I'm sorry, it was 2 days before. So I guess it was Monday. Flew right. Tuesday. Watched the whole thing Wednesday. And that's a bucket list for me.
I mean, that's a bucket list for anyone.
For anyone
who's ever picked up a golf club.
It's so pristine. I couldn't, but like, you know, you imagine what it's going to be like. And I said to somebody, it was like the entire course was on steroids. Like the grass was grass I had never seen before. The colors of the, you know, the flowers and everything in the landscaping was things I had never seen before. It was so nice. And it almost hurt to watch people just trampling around the whole place.
Yeah.
My grandfather used to play multiple times a year. He had a friend who was a member, and they would fly from Toronto on Friday, play Friday afternoon, play Saturday morning, and then they would fly back to Toronto.
Wow. So your dad's played Augusta multiple times.
My dad's never played Augusta.
Oh, your dad's
grandfather.
Friend. Oh, your grandfather.
My grandfather played all the time.
And your dad never got to join?
No.
Dang.
I know.
Is your dad pissed about that?
Oh, yes.
That's harsh, dude.
I know.
And it's too late now.
Yep.
Oh,
I know. So maybe I get my dad out there one day.
I mean, I see it as being pretty possible.
Yeah. It was funny. I was shooting a movie in Atlanta, and the producers found out I love golf, and it was a CBS Films movie, and CBS had the rights to the Masters that year, and they're like, well, let's just see if we can get you out on Augusta. And in my head I'm like, you guys have no idea what you're asking,
right?
And I was like, yeah, for sure,
yeah, let's try it.
And they came back the next day, they're like, yeah, we can't do it.
I'm like, no, I'm shit. Like,
I know.
Yeah, I mean, that's like...
No surprise there.
It is the hardest thing in golf. All right, Bixby Coffee, everybody. Look, here's the main thing you should know about Bixby Coffee. My friend Miles started it, and the guy loves golf. Also, he really was inspired by Vice Golf. This is a hybrid ad, folks. Wrap your head around that. Selling two birds with one stone. And guess what? We still only made about $4 on this ad. So mom and dad, forget it. Just buy Bixby Coffee, and the great news is that you've cut out the middleman. You've gotten started for $5. The fresh coffee is to your door, because the deal is when you go to the supermarket and buy coffee, that coffee's already been on the shelf for months. When you buy Bixby, it gets roasted that day. In fact, I went to Bixby. They're in L.A. I ate a coffee bean right out of the roaster, and I mean, I had to shit immediately, but I'll tell you, it was delicious while it lasted. So check out BixbyCoffee.com, and you're going to be excited, mostly because it's got caffeine inside, but also because it tastes good, and it's very simple, and those are things that we all appreciate. So anyway, check it out. Bye-bye. All right, everybody. Precision Pro. Here's the thing about Precision Pro. They got started with a simple question. Quote, why can't anyone make a quality rangefinder at a reasonable price? I also have this question. That was 4 years ago, and now Precision Pro Golf makes the NX7 series rangefinder that's been named the best value rangefinder in 2018. That's a big thing. MyGolfSpy.com said that. MyGolfSpy. Anyway, their rangefinders contain all the bells and whistles that golfers love without the bloated price that other companies charge. Because to be honest, nobody likes bloating, especially when it comes in your price tag. The NX7 Pro Slope Rangefinder is the number one selling rangefinder on Amazon.com right now. Is that true? Is it the number one? No one's in my house. Colt, Snowball, and Max are all in my house. Is it the number one? Check. Is Precision Pro really the number one selling rangefinder? I don't want to purport false claims. Colt's checking. Anyway, that's on sale for $218, and that's $30 off its normal price. Can you believe that? It offers slope-adjusted yardages, pulse vibration technology, which, as a human being, I love. I love pulse vibrations, good or bad. 2-year warranty. Dang, that's 2 years, man. That's a long time. That's longer than I've ever had a rangefinder. My last one was stolen, so if you have my rangefinder right now, it says Eric Lang on it. You're an asshole. Also, it comes with industry-leading precision care package that includes a free lifetime battery replacement service. A lot of script. I'm almost done, guys. Hang on. Any news, Colt? Still no news. We're waiting. For golfers, confidence is a wonderful thing. Doubt is not. Precision Pro understands that, and it's why their rangefinder is the perfect combo of performance and price. I love combos like that. Oh my God. NX7 rangefinder is, whoa, look at all these reviews. Does what I wanted. Love it. Just what I was looking for. Price was right. From Lowell H. Danny B says, I like it. We're reading real reviews. 5 stars. 781 reviews. Dude, here's the deal. They sent it to me, but I haven't had a chance to play with it yet. We're going to see. Right now, the NX7 Pro is on sale for $30 off at precisionprogolf.com. 2-year warranty, 90-day money-back guarantee, lifetime battery replacement service. Lifetime battery replacement. Whoa, Cadillac rangefinder with a VW price. I like it. That guy, I want to hang out with. Major Duffer.
Let's get Major Duffer on the pod because I want to see this. But the battery replacement service is crazy. Seriously, lifetime battery replacement service. For, I'm just learning about this. Swing with confidence. Hit more greens with Precision Pro Golf. Guys, sounds like if you don't buy this, you're the idiot. So anyway, ciao for now. Rain, guys. Let's talk rain. I'm not talking about what the Spanish call lloviendo because that's literally rain on a cloudy day. I'm talking about rain on a sunny day. R-A-E-N. The sunglasses of SoCal, folks. California classic, handmade quality eyewear and sunglasses at an accessible price. That means accessible. The word here, functional, means anyone can get at it. 40% off is the sale currently happening for these accessible, already accessible sunglasses. Anyway, they're good for golf, and they are a very sophisticated and cultured look, which is actually very true. Rain maintains an undying allegiance to the local culture that inspired its existence. They are SoCal through and through. That means that a lot of SoCal going on in the frames, in the lenses, in the vibes of the people wearing the frames and the lenses. Rain's brand is steeped in stories and images of the beach, the ocean, surfing, skating, convertibles, and road trips. They've sent me a few pair. I honestly love them. A lot of people ask me about them. I can't remember the names of the frames that I wear, but the truth is they all look good on me. Hopefully that means they'll all look good on you. I think that's what's going to happen. Either way, check them out. Get an advantage of the sale. Rain always brings high-quality handmade frames to you at an accessible price point. I feel like I'm repeating myself, and I probably am. That's Jeff's fault because he wrote this script. Starting November 21st, you can save 40% off on all of Rain's sunglasses. Visit R-A-E-N. Jeff, you spelled the URL wrong, dude. R-A-E-N.com. Is that right? Cole, can you check and see if that's right? R-A-E-N.com. We're doing a co-ad here. And dive into this incredible 40% discount. The R-A-E-N.com, that is an accurate URL. R-A-E-N.com and save 40% off any. Whoa, dude, 40% off on all of Rain sunglasses? I think Colt's going to get some. The sale begins on November 21st and ends on November 26th, so don't miss out on this special discount. Dude, that is a good deal. I feel like I want to email this to everybody I know. 40% off? I'm not bullshitting you guys. How much are the glasses right now? They're $100, right? Guys, we're going deep on this ad because I'm feeling like I'm actually giving you something here. You're actually getting something. Finally, an ad is actually giving you something. Hang on. Holy shit. Oh, so I like the Remy. That's my favorite pair. Oh, fuck. The Remy is, yeah, okay, there it is. So check it out. Internet. God, I just switched to fiber. Remy is $170. All right, so at 40% off, I have no idea. They're $500. God damn, $100 for the Remy's. Guys, go get them. Let me know if you get them because I actually do care. I really do. Also, mom and dad, love you guys. Have a good holiday.
Yo, Adidas golf shoes, y'all. I've worn lots of shoes since I started playing golf 7 years ago, but I haven't found anything that matches Adidas. It's actually very true. Boost, all capitals, folks, B-O-O-S-D. Boost is the best cushioning in the game. And they test all their shoes so that you get the stability you need for the swing that you want or whatever. Whether it's the Tour 360, which is all around a great shoe, or the Adicross Bounce, that's what I like. I typically wear, well, I like the Adipure, y'all, because they're classy as fuck. And I also like the Cross Knit Boost, y'all. It's an older model, but they look kind of fly. Everyone thinks I'm wearing running shoes on the course, but no, I've got stability and I've got little nubs to keep me in check when I over-rotate with the big stick. Everything that they make is so versatile and comfortable, but most importantly, they're all built to perform on the course. Visit adidas.com and click on the golf section or visit your local retailer. Maybe just go online, y'all. Who wants to go to a local retailer? Let's face it. To find the pair that's right for you, you can also follow Adidas Golf on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook for all the latest news and releases. Check it out.
What? So you, when your dad does get the hole in one,
mm-hmm.
How does that go down? Does he call you?
I wasn't there. He called me. He has two holes in ones, holes in one with the same foursome that he only plays with once or twice a year, and they were like 3 years apart.
What are the chances? That's very strange.
I know. But he was very adamant to let me know that he has two and I have one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's important for you to know, mm-hmm. to make sure that you have that information.
Yeah. and that it was like the worst shot of my golfing life.
Why is it always the bad ones?
It was so bad.
Mine was pretty thin too.
Was it?
Yeah,
I think it's because it covers really more ground.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Or maybe it's just because, like, I don't know. It's like, it's almost like everything's so bad about it that it might have just been online. Like, I mean, who knows at what speed? I didn't see mine go in, so I don't know. Mm. It might have hit the flag, jumped 4 feet in the air, and then fallen straight down or something. And then, you know, I tried to get a hole in one intentionally. I sat on a par three for 2 days.
No way.
And tried to get a hole in one. And I'm considering.
How long was the hole?
130.
Okay, very reasonable.
Yeah,
sure.
127. So actually, it's funny because I don't. My phone just rang, and it was John Ashworth. You know John Ashworth?
No, but I know.
It's the same name.
Okay.
He used to have a clothing line that was on Golf Channel. Now it's sold. Okay. But now he owns a company called Linksole, which actually makes really cool apparel.
Yes.
But anyway, so John resurrected a golf course in San Diego, and it's called Goat Hill Park. And it's this 18-hole par 65 community gathering place. There's music. There's a grass driving range. There's a barbecue. Cool. It's really inexpensive. There's caddies, local caddies. It's awesome. Public. Yeah, the motto is world class, working class.
That's cool.
It's super cool.
I lived in San Diego when I first moved to California. Where is it?
It's in Oceanside.
Okay. Yeah. I played Torrey Pines a ton when I first moved to California, because the San Diego resident
it's rate such a deal.
Is crazy.
So I'm bringing up John because we were talking about. I was thinking that for New Year's Eve this year, I would again try to get a hole in one on his course, and he was like, "I'm into it." So we're thinking about it.
Nice.
We're thinking about it. Like, would you go to? You wouldn't go to that New Year's Eve party at a golf course.
I'm in Toronto every New Year's.
I figured. Yeah.
I wish I was playing
busy.
Golf.
You don't want it, but it would be. But as an idea, it would be pretty fun, right?
Yeah.
Go to a golf course, have a party with some music and lights and food.
And you either end the year or start the year really, really well.
Or you just grind.
Yeah, that's true. It's how many shots did you take on that?
Like 1,500.
Wow.
Yeah. I was wearing like 4 gloves by the end.
Oh.
I think I was topless and I was wearing 2 gloves at the end.
And didn't get one.
No, I came like an inch and a half.
Stopped an inch and a half or like went by it?
Well, I was experimenting with different shots, right? So I was hitting a 7-iron, like a low kind of runner, like
sure, try and hit the hole.
Yeah, the best shot I hit though, I think, was a pitching wedge, and it just was like think think, and it just like jumped. Stopped. And it just was like it just needed like one more turn and it was in.
I had the day before my wedding in LA, my dad came to town for the week leading up to it. And we played some golf. And I played a lot at Angeles National before I joined a club in LA.
I like that course.
It's great.
Yeah.
And I never know if it's the first, second, third. It's either the third hole or the 12th hole, because they send you off on the front and the back all the time. So I always confuse whether it's the front or the back.
Is it the short par three or the long one? Because I think maybe both of those are par threes.
It's not the short one. It's the longer one where the green runs hard to the left.
That's a long hole. Mm-hmm. That's like 210.
No. Well, maybe you play the tips. I don't play the tips.
I don't know if I play the tips, but
this
that's
one
a hard
was,
course.
It was about 185 yards.
That's long.
And I played like a 7-iron. Or a soft 6-iron out to the right, and it landed up on, you know, kind of midway up the hill on the right, and it starts rolling down right towards the pin. And my dad and I are watching it. We're watching it, and this thing is tracking right at the hole. It looks like it's going to go in. We're both ready to celebrate, and the ball stays there. So we can see the pin, the hole, and the ball, and it looks like the ball is in the hole, but it won't drop. We get up there, and it is about, like, 3 centimeters behind the hole, pin high. It rolled back and just sat there. And I was just like, damn, this would have been so much better than the first one.
Right. You deserve this.
This was a nice shot with great timing, and it just didn't go.
It really is remarkable how much luck goes into a hole-in-one.
Oh, yeah. I've seen people, I play with a kid at Lakeside a lot who's a +4 or +6.
No way.
Yeah, and he got a full ride to Cal State Long Beach Division I.
Okay.
It's fun to watch, and I've seen him. There's a short par three at Lakeside it plays about 75 yards. There's two greens, 75 yard green and like 160 yard green.
Yeah.
And I've seen him lip twice and hit the pin on the short version of the hole.
Oh.
And he's never had a hole in one.
No.
Every time he's
at that skill.
Yeah.
Alfonso has two hole in ones on that hole.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
He's
a good player.
You know, Jordan, my intern, caddies at Lakeside. Did you
recognize
him?
Oh, does
him?
He? No. Yeah. Oh, cool.
He's a good guy.
I just haven't been there that long.
So you just joined Lakeside. You're I mean, of all the clubs in LA, that's one of my favorites.
It's really fun. For me, it was a convenience thing of being 5 minutes down the street from where I live. My dad and I snuck onto the golf course 5 years ago. My dad was in town.
You snuck onto Lakeside?
Yeah, kind of accidentally. My mom, my dad, my sister were in town, and my wife and I were dating at the time, but we took them to Universal Studios. And Universal Studios, if you look down off the big stairways in between the two parks, is Lakeside. You just see the entire golf course. And I was like, what golf course is this? How have I never played here before? And obviously because it's private, I just didn't know anybody there. So my dad's like, let's go down and drive. So we drive there. So we drop the girls off at the house and we drive over to Lakeside. And I'm in like cargo shorts and a LA Kings t-shirt because I'm not expecting to get on the golf course.
Yeah.
We drive up and the gates open.
Oh boy.
So my dad's like, drive in. And I was like, okay. So we drive in, we park the car, we walk up.
And you haven't seen a sign that says private.
Well, so.
But even in
where we play. Private courses, a lot of times you can still walk into the clubhouse and get like some membership information or something.
Well, especially in Canada. In America, exactly. It's not quite the same.
So this is the problem. Our course in Toronto, it's
semi-private.
It's gated. It says private, you know, golf course, but you can still drive up, go in. There's a, you know, a management office that you can ask for information.
Yeah, like private courses in LA, you can barely look at.
Yeah.
Like they're like, stop looking at us.
So we walk onto the putting green and it's Mother's Day. So you've got a bunch of people dressed up to the nines, drinking champagne, taking putts on the putting green. And my dad's like, what is this place?
Right.
He goes, you need to be a member here. And this guy comes over, looks at us, and he goes, can I help you?
Amazing. And you're wearing a t-shirt and cargo shorts.
I'm wearing a yellow LA Kings t-shirt, which is the only reason they didn't throw me off, because it was the classic yellow and purple one. And he was like, that's a great shirt. Can't be wearing it here. But amazing. That's a great shirt. And we were honest. I was just like, I'm really sorry. The gate was open. My dad and I are members at a golf course in Toronto. I live up the street. You know, I was 26 at the time or 25 at the time. And the guy we happened to bump into was one of the board of directors for junior memberships.
No way.
Yeah. So it just luck of the draw. He was like, here's my information. You know, you can't be here, but give me a call. Let's talk about, you know, getting you a game with some players. And I booked a TV show that shot in Vancouver and I left town.
Right.
And I followed up with him and I was just like, look, I'm heading out of town. I don't want to waste your time. You know, thank you for everything.
And was this at the time, did you realize like the Bel Air, Riv, LACC kind of like quotient of LA golf?
Not really. Golf kind of got put on hold when I first moved to LA. Right. I thought I was going to play a ton, but I mean, as you know, it's an expensive sport.
Yeah.
It's a big time consumer.
So time consuming.
So, you know, I moved to LA from Toronto at 19 or 20 years old, 2007. I'm like, my budget is, you know, I'm living off Subway sandwiches.
Really?
Because the $5 footlong saved my life.
So this is, at what age is this? 20? 22?
20. This was 19 or 20. So 2007.
So you come to, you skip college and you come straight to LA?
Yeah.
Gangster. I'm a big fan of that move.
Well,
were your parents okay with that?
So I grew up playing hockey. And like I said, I was a hockey player who just happened to get into acting. I got an audition for a movie.
I thought you were kidding though. You're being really serious?
Oh, yeah. Like, I grew up playing hockey. I played against Wayne Simmonds. I was one of those guys who was pretty realistic about my, you know, my hockey career.
Yeah.
I loved it. I played at a very high level in Toronto. But, you know, you find out if you've got a realistic shot, you find out when you're like 12 years old. That's when you get drafted to 12, 13. You get drafted to the OHL. From there, you've got a shot at going pro. Otherwise, it's like any other really hard job or career, not unlike acting.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, I think hockey is easier than acting.
So that was the thing. I did commercials and print work when I was young, and then my modeling agent phoned me, and she was like, you have an audition tomorrow. It's my first movie audition I ever had. I went in, I read for it, thought it went fine. They called the next day. They're like, you booked it. You're shooting for 2 months. I hope you don't have a summer job, which I did. I was going to teach little kids golf at...
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, I'll take the movie over the golf.
Yeah, they'll be fine.
But I just took it as an opportunity to change my life and give it a shot. So I talked to my mom and dad, and I was like, look, I had a blast doing this. I loved it. I really think I can, you know, I can give this a shot. So I got into on-camera classes and then booked a Disney show in Toronto, which shot for my 11th and 12th grade years.
Okay.
And I was just like, you know, I've saved up enough money, and I've got my visa to give this a shot in LA. So I moved down to LA with a buddy of mine who I grew up playing hockey with, who was going to University of San Diego. So I lived with him in San Diego and just made the trek back and forth. But it was just kind of one of those things where you look back at it and it seems like a bigger deal than at the time. You're just like, well, I'll give it a shot and maybe it'll work, maybe it won't.
Right.
I can always come back to Toronto and go to school. I can always go to, you know, my sister went to McGill. I got offered a baseball scholarship, which is so weird because I barely played baseball. The scout came to, baseball is not nearly as big in Canada as it is in the States.
Right. They're like this game has the ball with the red laces.
Yeah. It doesn't matter at all. Right, like there's not much to it. He came to a game. I got a home run and I threw a guy out from the outfield. And that was like, that was enough. That's all he needed to see. And so it was funny. When I got called about the scholarship, the coach was like, I can't remember his name, but he's like, is this Robert Amell? I was like, oh, no, I think you're looking for my dad. And I was like, no, I don't think. He's like, no, I don't think so. I'm like, okay. Yeah, it's Robert Amell, but it's Robbie. He goes, okay, Robbie, I'm so-and-so, the baseball coach at McGill University. And I was like, uh-huh. He's like, we want to talk to you about a scholarship. And I was like, who is this?
Amazing.
He's like, no, this is... I was like, oh, this is for real. Okay, sure. So we talked it over, and I was like, look, I'm going to LA to give acting a shot, but if it doesn't work out, I'd love to talk about this more. And my mom didn't believe. My mom's like, you're full of shit.
You have a lot of opportunities. This is amazing.
It's just, it was a weird string of like a year.
Right.
But I, like looking back, it does seem like a big deal to move to LA and really give it a shot, but I had great friends who I met shooting. Like the first movie I did was called Cheaper by the Dozen 2.
Yeah.
And I had almost no lines in it, so I couldn't screw anything up. But I got to watch Eugene Levy and Steve Martin and Bonnie Hunt, you know, just do their thing. And they were so funny and so talented and had such a good time doing it. It kind of made it seem like it was a realistic goal.
Right. Well, you're in that sphere for a second.
Yeah, they made it. They like the wall had been broken down because they were so cool and so down to earth and so real that I was like, you know, maybe this is something that I can actually do. They didn't make it this big huge deal. They were just super grounded and couldn't have been nicer.
Right.
So I met. I had two best men at my wedding because my wife had two maids of honor. So my other best man was a guy named Jonathan Bennett, who was the lead guy in Mean Girls.
Okay.
And Johnny kind of took me under his wing and, you know, he was like, this is everything I know about the industry. These are the things that you should avoid. These are the things that can be great. I didn't even have a real agent in Toronto at the time. And he goes, well, here's what you do. Find out from one of the other kids in the Canadian side of the cast who the best agent is, and you phone them and you say, hi, my name's Robbie Amell. I'm currently shooting an $85 million American movie in Toronto, and I would like an agent.
That's really
and
he goes, smart.
And they'll say, great.
Yeah, done.
So I got a Canadian agent, not in quite as many words, but it just kind of changed my life, and I decided to run with it, and luckily... it hasn't blown up in my face just yet.
I mean, it sounds, you know, when you talk about the idea of like, it wasn't a big deal, right? When you started out like that, like what age are you saying that was? Like
19.
Late 19? Okay.
So it was the movie was the summer before 11th grade. So I was 16 at the time, but I always found that I was like a kind of a mature 16. Mm. Part of which was just because the guys I grew up with playing hockey with, like, we probably grew up a little too fat. We were drinking on the weekends. Like, we were, you know, I was a 16 that was kind of acting like probably an American 18 or 19 year old. Like, I feel like my college years were my last couple years of high school.
Right.
Just with the people I hung out with and the trouble we got into, which is why I kind of feel for people like, you know, the Shawn Mendes or the opposite side is that, like, the Justin Biebers.
Sure.
Where it's like, this is a guy who literally grew up under a spotlight, under a microscope, with unlimited finances. And I was just like, man, if everything I did in high school was on Twitter or Instagram, like, I would be painted like a dickhead too.
Oh yeah. No, I would be, it would be a caricature of myself. Yeah,
like, I was given the opportunity to kind of screw up and learn from it and grow from it. Whereas, you know, I think that's kind of tough for some of these young celebrities. So yeah. I'm kind of glad that I got started with it a little later in life.
Yeah.
I got to screw up.
Well, I mean, I think that's the big, I don't know. I was just thinking about the idea that if you don't know the consequences, mm-hmm. right, you can almost like go into it with, like you said, like it's like it wasn't a big deal. Like, I'm going to go move to LA and try this thing. Whereas, like, all of a sudden there's an element of adulthood where everything becomes very serious.
Yeah. What if it doesn't work out?
Yeah.
Well, then you just go home.
And what's funny is for me right now, like, I mean, I'm 37 and I'm trying to just sort of incorporate as much, you know, playful experimentation, no big deal. I mean, I read this thing once about, you know, kids, right? Like developmental childhood, 2 years old, whatever. Like, when they, without any parental focus or attention, you know, they just sort of figure out how to walk. And it's like, that's it. But when we're there, or I don't have a kid, but like when a parent is there, they start clapping and they smile. And the kid's like, I've done something good. But really, the child is just figuring out how to stand. And once they've done it, they're like, all right, moving on. Next. And it's kind of like when they fall, it's also not a big deal. I mean, they might get frustrated, but I don't know. I just kind of been looking at, you know, the work that I do and how I can continue to experiment with it, but it is difficult.
Yeah, I think the fear of failure gets much more drastic as you get older.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of the thing where, you know, is it really worth trying it when a lot of things I do, I try not to let a lot of people I know I'm doing it, because then, like, I don't have to deal with, if it doesn't work out, then I don't have to deal with the, you know, the other side of it where people are like, oh, you're still doing that thing? Like, no, I don't know.
Is this a superstition?
No, it's, some of it is some things that I feel like I'm just going to like half-ass and just kind of try, and maybe it works out, maybe it doesn't, then, you know, I don't really do it. But if it's something I want to be held accountable for, like something big that I really want to, you know, give a real shot, then I'll tell, like, you know, the close friends.
Right.
And then they'll keep me honest and see if I'm still on top of it.
Right. See, this is why in golf I call every shot. I just call every shot, you know? And on every par three, it's a hole in one.
Of course.
And even though it's been about a long dry stretch. Do you experience any, you know, because I play golf and I'm me. And I'm on the tee box, and I'm just thinking about golf the way I think about it.
Just a quick question. You started at 30 years old.
Yeah.
What's your handicap?
It's a 7, 6, 8, 7.
Good for you. That's great.
Thank you.
How long did it take from, like, after you started, after you hit your first golf ball,
right,
to be in bogey golf?
Maybe 3 years, 2 or 3 years. Yeah, probably about that.
Do you find you get maybe more frustrated now that you're better?
Now I'm experiencing a wonderfully peaceful time.
Good for you.
Yeah. There was a period several years ago, maybe 2, 3 years ago, when I was trying to get better. Mm-hmm. And then you go, trying to get better ruined my golf game.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely understand that. I'm like, I'm playing more golf now than I ever have in my life because I joined the club. I have an Amazon show that doesn't start shooting till the end of February.
Awesome.
It's great, but I'm in kind of this work limbo where it's tough to book a role that will shoot between now and February.
Yeah.
Because most things will run through February or at least into February, and I just, like, I can't commit to them. So I'm in this weird limbo of like, okay, I've got a ton of time on my hands. Let's get really good at golf.
Let's get to a plus two.
And like, I'll go out and shoot. I had my lowest round I've ever had at Lakeside. Oh, I shot 73.
Dude, that's a hard course. That's even par, right?
It's a 70. So I was three over 70. With a double on 17.
Ooh.
I know. And
17's a hard hole. Did you miss left?
No. So the interesting thing was I was in the rough on the left, and I had to go over the small tree, which was fine. But the ball just flew out of the rough on me. They had the rough nice and long for it was the Bob Hope, which is a member, it just came out of the rough. One hopped on the green, and behind the green it goes like steep quickly.
It's like Mount Everest.
Yeah, and I put a. I took a lob wedge, and I just put it a little over the pin, through the fringe, really bad putt, and then left my bogey putt on the lip. It just sat there.
I mean, so dude, getting my double. Getting up and down at Lakeside is no joke.
Yeah.
Lakeside's a really, if you haven't played in L.A., Lakeside is one of these beautiful courses that's long, it's tight, the greens are
it's only two par fives, which is
a bitch.
Just and they're holes fives. Two and four.
Yeah, exactly. So after, right there.
Starting on the fifth hole, you got no more scoreable par fives.
The fourth hole does not feel like a par five because I'd have never seen anyone get there in two.
I've only seen a couple people do it. It's 580 yards, but it feels way more because it's always into the wind.
Yeah.
And the tee shot is slightly uphill into rollers.
Yeah.
And then unless you get down the hill off the tee, which is like 310.
Yeah.
You're not getting home in two.
You have to beat your drive, and you have to literally land it. Like, you know, you've got a very small landing area in order to actually get the roll you want.
And then you're likely hitting a three wood to get on to a green that's surrounded by bunkers and is the tiniest OB
green
left.
The green is smaller than this bedroom.
We're
not in a bedroom, by the way. We're in a fucking office. Relax.
There was a kid in the Kelly Cup, a college player, that went driver 4-iron.
No.
Yeah. And made his eagle from like 6 feet.
I just love Lakeside because to me, I grew up in New Jersey on the East Coast. So like, you know, Lakeside feels like it's from there and probably for you like Toronto.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
I hate Kikuyu grass.
Oh, I hate it.
So much.
Hate it.
Growing up on the East Coast, like we don't have it there. No. It's like hitting off of a carpet that's not attached to the ground underneath it. It's the worst.
Yeah.
You can chunk a chip so easily. That's my favorite part about Lakeside. It feels like East Coast grass.
Did you you joined it because of the neighborhood? I guess that's what you said.
I joined it because of a few things. I've played.
I mean, it's your spot. Let's face it.
It's amazing.
It's the Entertainers Club.
It's so great.
Yeah,
there's history behind it. It's really cool.
You know, have you met Bob any Hope of the other notables? Joe Pesci.
Pesci, my wife. So my wife and I went for dinner, and Pesci comes walking over. And he's got a hat on, and he's talking to my wife, and they're arguing about how to pronounce something in Italian.
Oh.
Yeah, and like he's taking his hat off and put it on her head, and he leaves, and my wife just goes, yeah, my dad's never going to believe any of this. Like he's a legend, and then he's even more so an Italian legend.
Right.
Like he's been in every, you know, like Casino. He's been in every big mobster movie.
Yeah.
So, I
mean, his best role was in Home Alone, though. Yeah, like.
I can't argue with
that. I mean, it's so good.
Yeah.
Marv! Who do you admire the most professionally?
Acting or golfing?
Ooh.
Or hockey?
Well, let's do all three.
I was at the hockey game last night. I grew up a Leafs fan. My grandfather was on the board of directors, so I spent a lot of time at Maple Leaf Gardens, but growing up, they were really bad.
Yeah.
So I moved to LA and got season tickets with my cousin. And we watched them win two cups. So it's nice to see the Leafs be really good with Austin Matthews and Tavares and everything. But that's off topic. Anyway.
I wish I knew more about hockey. I have seen a couple hockey games in person.
It's way better live. I feel so fun. Most people that don't get into hockey haven't seen a hockey game live. Yeah. I understand not being able to watch it on TV unless you played it. It's tough to follow the puck. It's not nearly as loud or fast or exciting. But seeing it live is great.
How much time do we have left in the season?
It just started.
Oh, great. I'm going to buy some tickets. I'm going.
Go. You know what? Spend the money. Sit on the glass for one game.
On the glass.
On the glass. In LA, it's super reasonable.
Yeah, it's like $150 or something.
Yeah. Don't sit second row. Sit first row on the glass because the glass bends now too.
Whoa.
So like when a guy gets hit beside you, the glass goes right towards your face.
Whoa.
And it's just, it's loud and it's fast and it'll make you appreciate the game.
It's better going to one game on the glass than like three.
Yes.
In 10th row.
Yeah.
I think I did 10th row. I went on Valentine's.
10th row is really good because you're at that nice level to see over the glass.
Yeah.
And you can see the whole game.
Yeah.
You want to either be first row just for the experience or you want to be like 12 to 15.
Okay. I think I had probably been advised somewhere. Yeah. And then are you a Bill Burr fan?
Yeah.
He's a big hockey guy.
Is he?
Loves it. You know, do you listen to podcasts?
A few.
Yeah. What do you listen to?
I like Joe Rogan's.
He's amazing.
It's just so weird.
Yeah, he's amazing. I mean, he is.
But sometimes I'm like, this is 3 hours.
There could be a little editing. There could. I mean, it's kind of baller that he's just like, fuck it.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's.
His guests are also crazy.
Yeah, and there's no rhyme or reason. No. They're just interesting to him.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah. Fantasy football. Fantasy okay. Focus podcast.
Yeah.
NFL wasn't that big when I was growing up in Canada.
In Canada, but now it is, right?
It's big now. Yeah. It's made the leap. Also, maybe it just was that like I was such a hockey kid that NFL wasn't that big a deal.
Sure.
But moving here, getting into fantasy football with the same group of friends that we've been playing it for 7 years now is like, I'm obsessed. It's bad.
Dude, NFL's amazing.
Really awful.
It's a great game.
Yeah, it is.
It's easy to watch, too. It's way better than baseball.
But I love baseball. It's incredibly frustrating to play fantasy football.
I've never been able to mess with that.
It's awful.
I don't think... I'm like, it takes a lot of time.
It does. Yes and no. Like, football, you can get away with just doing a little bit of work. Like, baseball or basketball, you got to change guys every day.
Well, someone tried to get me fantasy golf, and I was like, you're kidding me, right? It's anyone's guess. It's
like DraftKings or whatever?
Yeah, I'm like, who knows?
I know.
Tiger's supposed to be the best.
You'd probably actually do really well at it, though. Because you have a certain amount of money that you can spend, so you'd be good at finding the guys that probably won't win but are going to make the cut and like are always in like that 20th range.
Right.
You'd probably crush fantasy
golf. Charles Howell III, right?
There you go.
You know the guy?
Mm-hmm.
He's made like $50 million.
Come on.
Yeah, and he's just like, he's won just once,
Mr. I think. Casual.
Yeah, Mr. like T19 every week. Every week, he's literally raking in like $98,000 a week. Boom, boom, boom. And he does that 30 times a year.
There you go.
That's $3 million a year. And for the last 14 years, he's done it.
Yep.
Something like that.
Mr. T for 90.
It's crazy, dude. And he's just like, you know, he's just, but I don't know. Anyway, but you know, not Bill Burr, huh? Not the podcast? Like, check out his podcast.
I will.
He's all hockey, dude.
Oh,
I mean,
cool.
He's all sports, but he loves hockey.
All right.
I think actually I was listening to him intensely when I bought the hockey tickets.
Really?
It's funny how that melts into your life, you know? What I really wanted to get at, though, is like as a hockey player, you stand on the tee. You're playing golf. How do you think – you may not know the answer to this, but how do you think golf is different for you as a trained, athletic hockey player than for other people? It might not be.
It's funny. A lot of people I'll play golf with that know swings and athletes, they'll be like, oh, you're a hockey player. And I can't pick off what it is, but I guess it has to do with years of taking slap shots from a certain, you know, body position. I don't have a lot of hip turn. And
yeah, I did Google your swing. I saw it. It's so intimate, by the way.
I don't have a lot of hip turn. It's a lot of shoulders. And I think it's from years of slap shots.
Yeah.
Snapshots.
We've got a high finish too, right? Don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. And putting, I feel more comfortable pointing towards the hole a little bit, almost like a snapshot.
Whoa.
Like, rather than being completely square over top of the ball, it just feels...
You want to be kind of open.
Feels more natural to be a little open. Yeah, that's what I heard. I didn't even realize that until I was talking to someone. They're like, yeah, Jack Nicklaus did that. He wanted to see the putt go in the hole.
Yeah, he was wide open.
I was like, oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's so funny. Like, having played a lot more lately, I've been going in these YouTube deep dives of trying to fix things in my
Your golf game?
Yeah.
Who's your favorite YouTube instructor?
I don't even have one. I just like I Google what I'm looking for, and there will be articles attached to YouTube videos, and some of them are just like guys in their garage. Like some of them are guys who are obviously in a cold climate somewhere in the UK. Some of them are straight off the Golf Channel.
Right.
And it's so funny. There are conflicting information or tips trying to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, well, who's right here? And you just have to try it out for yourself.
Dude, do you take lessons?
I haven't taken a lesson in a really long time.
All right. You know what? Here's the thing. I'm going to recommend this to you. I wouldn't recommend this to everybody because you have time and money.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should go see Dana Dahlquist, who's my swing coach.
Where?
He's in Long Beach.
I won't do it.
Yeah. It's
too
won't.
Far.
It's too far. But you have the time.
No, you're the Lakeside's 5 minutes
away. You're one of the few people. Okay, fine. Fine. I mean, but Dana is, I mean, he coaches, well, speaking of Charles Howell III, but.
I don't doubt that he could help me, right. But I also think that he would hurt me first, and I just can't handle worse in order to get better.
A lot of swing coaches will do that.
I'll go out and shoot like 73 like I did that day, and then I'll shoot an 82 the next day, and I'm just ready to snap a club over my knee. And it's one of those things where you're just like, what am I doing different? And there's so many things that it could be, and it's a game of millimeters.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to just kind of be able to justify that some days will be better than others.
I mean, that's it. I mean, if it was the same every day, you'd be bored.
Yeah.
I
would probably be doing it for a living. If I could really figure it out and like it was easy.
Someone hit me with some info. Like we were playing golf with this person who was like, I'm not playing very well. And the guy we were playing with was like, well, luckily, the great thing about golf is you can always be better, quite literally. Tiger Woods would like to be better.
Yeah, you can't win. Yeah. You can win a tournament, but you can't beat the game.
No, there's no perfect round. Mm. Is it even a 59, you probably maybe left one in the bag.
Ugh.
Who knows?
The kid I play with shot 60 at Lakeside. He set the course record on the new course, and he had a bogey.
No.
Yeah. He also went birdie, or he went eagle, birdie, birdie to finish.
How did he eagle the 16th?
Put a wedge in. Sucked it back right in the hole. Birdied 17, birdied 18. Had to drain like a 12-footer. And his dad knew it was... He was playing with his dad. And his dad knew it was for 60. Oh. And was just like waiting. And he always plays from the deepest tees. And because he plays in so many tournaments, he finishes every putt all the time.
Yeah.
So it was a...
Super authentic. Yeah.
Lights out, authentic... 60 with a bogey.
I thought I played well when I birdied 16 and 17 there. I mean, those are hard holes, but...
I'll take a birdie on those holes every day.
18 is a hard hole.
Yeah, it is.
Lakeside has some of the best tee boxes in California. They're perfect.
I have a problem with tee box that... that aim straight when I want to play it to the right or to the left.
Right.
Because my body just wants to aim exactly where the tee box are aimed.
Interesting.
So I need tee box to aim where I want to aim. I want to renovate all the tee box to my ball flight.
Maybe you could create like a little a device that you could bring with you that would like change the way you see the tee box.
I'm going to start setting up two tees on either side of me that are the tee box, my personal tee box.
So this is the pro tees, and those are the Robbie tees. Robbie tees are the Robbie tees just have like these crazy lines all over it. These like divots everywhere.
Where's he going this time?
Yeah. Dude, I mean, is there anything else I forgot? I mean, I feel like this is episode one. I feel like we'll have to continue this again after we play golf together or something.
Absolutely. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, is there anything else that we need to tell people? Get ready to watch this show coming up. When is it going to air?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be a little while.
It'll be like a full year.
Yeah, well, so the crazy thing is we shot the pilot in January.
Oh, my goodness.
It's from Greg Daniels, who created The Office and Parks and Recreation.
Yeah.
He's a genius, and I'm such a huge fan of his. So it was a process to book it and be the guy. But I ended up booking it. We shot in January. We had a lot of fun. It's called Upload. And the basis is it's a comedy where... set in the future where if you know you're going to die, you can upload your consciousness to heaven.
Whoa.
And my character's working on this free version of Heaven because Heaven's run by different corporations.
Right.
Like Netflix has a Heaven and Panera Bread's a big company in the future for some reason because Greg's weird and funny.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's a good lunch. Let's face it.
They paired with somebody. I can't remember. They grouped up. And my character's creating this free version of Heaven that you can just have with your family. And my self-driving car crashes and I'm being rushed through the hospital and it looks like I'm going to die. And I don't want to upload to Heaven, but my girlfriend convinces me to and uploads me to her account. She's very wealthy and her family has unlimited data on both sides for Heaven. Ooh. So think of Heaven as a phone plan.
Okay.
And I get uploaded there and it turns out it's essentially an old folks home because you really only get to upload if you know you're going to die. Anybody that dies quickly doesn't have a chance to upload. So most people who are young, you know, die in an accident, get uploaded, you know, unless you've got some kids who are sick or anything like that, you've got some young people. And the problem is the young people there still look young because it's taken from your likeness. So I meet a kid who's like, you know, 20 years old, but he still looks like he's 12. So it's this really weird out there. Think of like a comedic version of Black Mirror.
Right. Yeah, because there is a Black Mirror episode. There is an episode.
The VR one where the older people tap into like they go to like their paradise or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It's I can't remember what it's called. Like San Gabriel or something.
Yeah,
or
there's some similarities to that. There's some similarities to The Good Place.
Yeah.
But it's super fun. It's super out there. But we shot the pilot and then Amazon had a full like regime change.
Of the executives.
Overhauled everybody. So we were kind of in limbo, like, are we going to go? Are we not going to go? And then at the 11th hour, they're like, all right, we're going to pick you up for a season. And then they're like, all right, well, we need to open the writer's room. We got to write all the episodes. And they're like, well, by the time we're finished writing, it'll be, you know, end of November. And we shot the pilot in LA, but the show's going to shoot in Vancouver. So like, it's too cold and gross to shoot in Vancouver in November, December, January, February. So we'll start in March. So it'll be over a year from like pilot to second
episode. Is the pilot going to air as the first episode?
Yeah. Whoa. So it'll be 10 episodes on Amazon, all released at the same time, similar to how Netflix does it.
Awesome.
It's super fun. It's super weird. There's a great part in the second episode where like my character doesn't really know what to do with his life in this upload world. The place I am it's called Horizon Lakeview.
Like, how long are you there? Infinitely?
Yeah, you can't upload back or download.
You can't commit suicide in Heaven?
There is.
Oh boy.
We go across. We talk about that in the first episode. There's a data stream that you can just jump into and you're gone.
Whoa.
And I contemplate it. And then, but I'm like, I have no purpose here. I can't do anything. You can't work because it's illegal because technically you're dead. So I'm just like, what do I do here? Yeah. So she's like, let me show you something. This. So she takes me down the elevator to essentially like the ghetto of the upload world. And there's a little girl reading a book in a corner, reading 7 pages and then starting from the beginning. There's a guy just staring at a wall. A guy walks by with a Ken doll type private area.
He's got like no genitals.
He has no dick, just Ken doll.
Oh, like it's just smooth. And I'm like the hood of a car.
I'm like, what is going on here? And she goes, these are the 2 gigs. They only have 2 gigs of data per month. So once they're out of data, and I'm like, he doesn't have a dick. She goes, he can't afford a dick.
No.
Like, she's only reading 7 pages. She's like, those are the first 7 pages. They're free.
Oh my God.
So it's super.
So you're a VIP.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm living.
Mm-hmm.
So are you like, can you get lunch and shit and you go get food? And hang out?
Everything's an upcharge. Like I try and buy something and a little cloud pops up and it's like in-app purchase $2.99. And I try and take it and I'm not the one who owns the account. So it has to send my girlfriend a request for her to approve the charge.
Can you have a girlfriend in this Heaven?
Well, I have my girlfriend like outside cheating. Of Heaven, like and cheating. She essentially owns me as a human being in this place.
Can she
place.
See what you're doing?
Yeah, she can check in.
Oh, my
And God. She can come in. They call them hug suits for, like, old people or for young people to come in and hug their grandparents.
Dude, they make these for right now.
But
for
they're
like
just sex suits.
Phone sex. No, seriously, someone wears a glove and then there's an attachment.
Come on.
I did a thing.
Stop it.
No, I mean, I didn't do it. No, I did a pilot for a show on cyber sex. And there was the whole, I didn't do it. It wasn't me. Dude, that's so crazy. This sounds like the coolest show ever.
It is really interesting. The amazing thing is when I met with Greg, this has been like his brainchild for 15 years, 20 years.
Oh, wow.
But nobody was willing to make it 20 years ago because they were like, this is crazy. This is way too out there. No one will go for this. And then Black Mirror was a huge success and all these shows. And they were like, oh, okay, we'll make that show now.
Yeah.
And the poor guy, he watches like episodes of Black Mirror. And he's like, damn, like this was in my script years ago.
Oh.
So it's just like it's crushing some of his great ideas.
It'll still be great though.
Oh, it's really, really
fun.
And
what's it called again?
Upload.
Upload.
Yeah, but I'm
doing
that. Dude,
I can't wait.
That'll be probably a year. This time next year. Yeah. But I might get to play some golf in some cool places. My cousin and I did a movie called Code 8.
Okay.
If you go to code8.com, you can watch a short film. We raised $2.5 million on Indiegogo.
Wait, you guys produced it?
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah, my really good friend Jeff Chan, who directed it out of Toronto. Okay. We've self-financed a short film. We have an amazing group of friends who run a visual effects company in Toronto. They did all the visual effects at cost. This thing looks like a really expensive short film, but it was just all sweat labor from friends. And we ended up making a great movie last summer in Toronto, and then we had reshoots this past summer. And we're going to sell the movie in March, and then we have a global premiere tour. We're going to London, all over the United States and Canada, and then we're finishing in Australia.
Ooh, awesome.
Yeah. So
congratulations,
that one's really fun. That'll come out next summer, maybe June.
Okay.
That one's really fun, though. That one's been 2 years in the making for me and my cousin and my buddy Jeff. It was a swing that we decided to take a chance on, and it really worked out.
And so the short encompasses the concept of the feature?
Yeah, so the short was a world builder and like a proof of concept. It doesn't actually take place in the feature version. My character is very similar. A guy named Sung Kang, who played Han in the Fast and the Furious franchise.
Okay.
He plays a cop. His character is very similar. My best friend in the short film actually becomes Sung's character's partner in the feature.
Okay.
And then my cousin, who's in the feature with us, kind of takes me under his wing. My mom is sick in the movie, and he takes me under his wing and shows me kind of the underground... the criminal underworld of using your powers to make money. In this world, 4% of the population is born with some kind of abnormal ability. But there's no Superman. There's no superheroes. These are just people who are trying to get by. Most of the powers are completely useless. Some of the they range from a class 1 to a class 5, and a class 5 is dangerous. But a class 1 is really nothing at all. But nobody will hire you because anybody with power is kind of looked at as a minority, and everybody's scared of them.
Really?
So the police force is very militarized. You've got robotic police force. You've got drones. It's kind of our take on the superpower genre, but it's much more grounded. It's kind of like a crime drama.
Dude, I love all the sci-fi.
It's really fun.
I'm really into it.
Cool. Yeah. I think you'll dig it. This one was... it was really fun to put together, and we launched this Indiegogo campaign hoping we would make a couple hundred grand to get our our movie off the ground. And $2.5 million later, people really dug it.
How did you get $2.5 million?
We sold a lot of t-shirts and hoodies, and the premiere tour. We're doing premieres in London, Toronto, Vancouver, Chicago.
Oh, I see. So you sold tickets.
Miami, Dallas, LA. Two different parts of Australia. We haven't decided yet, Sydney and Melbourne or Sydney and Perth. And then we sold, we got a great deal with China. So we're going to do a China release as well.
Okay.
But it was just one of those things where we just kind of hoped people would dig it. And the fans have been absolutely incredible.
Right.
I was at the hockey game last night, and the usher who would come down and make sure nobody tried to jump on the ice over the glass, as I was walking up, he goes, hey, this guy's like, you know, maybe 45, 50 years old. He goes, hey, when's the movie coming out?
Whoa.
And I was like, Code 8? He's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, like this summer, I think. He goes, what are you going to do? I'm like, oh, I don't know, maybe, you know, a Netflix or an Amazon or a streaming thing. I'm like, maybe theaters. We're not sure yet. We haven't sold it yet. He's like, I can't wait, man. He's like, I'm really excited for it.
And oh, that's
like,
this so is really cool. That's so cool, man, because that's something that you made.
It's pretty fun. It's been such an awesome experience to work with friends and family on this thing. And, you know, we had some offers from studios after the short film and the Indiegogo campaign did so well. We did a week-long set of meetings, and it was funny. Some people were like, we'd tell them how we planned on making the movie. There was some, you know, some government money through Telefilm, which is government subsidy for the arts programs.
Okay.
And tax credits and the money from Indiegogo. I was like, we're going to make this movie for, you know, this amount of dollars. And some people were like, you can't do that. That'll never work. And then other people were like, if you can do this, you should do this. And they're like, we're here if you want any help. But if you can make this movie, go make the movie the way that you can and then sell it afterwards. So they're like, retain, you know, yeah, kind of the creative control on the upside. And so you don't have to answer to anybody. But if you want to run stuff by us, we'll help you. So it was really interesting to see kind of the two sides of, like, most of the time it was people who've kind of been in the industry for a long time and see it one way and aren't really open to it changing. And the other side was like, you know, for instance, Blumhouse, who has really kind of changed the whole game as far as making, you know, these $2 million movies that make $100 million. And they were like, this is really interesting. If you guys can do this, you should go do this.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, it's hard to look at it differently.
For sure. But you have to. I mean, with companies like Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and Apple getting into the game and Facebook and YouTube, not to mention, like, HBO is changing everything now. They originally spent $1 billion a year on new content. They just announced they want to do $4 billion a year in new content. Netflix is doing, they announced they wanted to do 7 or 8 billion. They did 12 or 13 billion this past year.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, there's so many outlets now that you can't just expect to be able to sit on somebody and tell them how to do something the entire time.
Right. Well, and I mean, I think that's the coolest thing too, is like, I mean, I don't know, when we were younger, it was like, you couldn't just make anything.
Yeah.
And now you can not only go make something, but you can make something and make money. Like, Indiegogo is a way to make money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can do so many different things.
Like, the technology has really changed. You know, everybody's got a camera in their hands.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
or we're doing a podcast here. Like, the gear to make this podcast is maybe $1,000.
It's amazing. The creative opportunity is in everybody's hand right now.
Yeah.
Which is great. You know, which has really shifted the film school.
Yeah.
Programs and stuff. Like, it's all hands on now because. Right. You can go make a short film. You can go make, you know, YouTube video. You're not famous until you're YouTube famous. I did.
Is that what it is?
Oh, it's the crazy. It's crazy. YouTube stars are. You think somebody like? I mean, obviously, there's the Tom Cruises and stuff, right? But if you think somebody is pretty famous, walk down the street with like a YouTube star,
right?
It's crazy.
Well, I heard, you know, speaking of, we were talking about Alfonso Ribeiro in the mm-hmm. beginning. Will Smith is now much more known and YouTube. Relevant because of his YouTube.
He's crushing
thing.
YouTube.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, even younger than me, like, I miss the YouTube. I watch a lot of YouTube, but I'm not nearly the YouTube generation.
No.
Like, 10 years younger than me and younger, like, I feel like 20 years and younger right now, 20 years old and younger, is YouTube everything.
Their first place to look for a solution to something is on YouTube.
It's unbelievable. You can learn almost anything on YouTube.
Pretty much.
It's crazy. Yeah. Everything you want to know, a 12-year-old has made a tutorial video.
And they're famous.
Yeah. It's absolutely wild. That I was watching at the hockey game last night, there were two kids sitting in front of us, and they were, I want to say like 8 or 9. They weren't that interested in the hockey game. They were there with their parents. Parents had their Leafs jerseys on. And they had the phone, and they were passing it back, and they were watching YouTube videos.
No way.
Called the most satisfying slime videos.
Basically our version of Nickelodeon.
It was crazy. It was just like hands squishing slime and like putting Whoa. It into cups and like gooping it out. I was like, this is crazy. This is
that's nuts.
This is so weird to me.
These kids have expensive seats.
Yeah.
And all they want to do is watch a free video that has no narrative.
It's wild.
That the interesting thing for me, though, too, is like how YouTube has deleted narrative mm-hmm. in some ways. It really is.
It's also shortened attention spans by a mile.
Well, and even Instagram videos, because, I mean, that's really what, I don't know, what mm-hmm. what's, is that your main intake?
I would say social media would be, Instagram would be my
Who's
my
your favorite person to follow that you don't know or account?
Oh, man. I gotta look at it.
We're
opening I'll tell
up
you
the
right
phone.
Now. Let's see. I know Batch, so I can't say him.
I don't know what Batch is.
His name's King Batch, Andrew King. Batchelor.
Okay.
He was, I've done two movies with him. Awesome guy. Really, really nice. Really, really funny. And he was a Vine star.
Oh.
And he went from Vine to YouTube and Instagram. And, I mean, let me look what he's got now. He's got to be at like 15 million.
Batch. What is it?
King, I have no, King I have no service in your...
Yeah, you probably don't. I'm sorry. King Batch. Got it.
What's he at? Like 16 million?
Yeah 17. That 17 internet million. Guy who's in movies now. That's
exactly. And like, couldn't be a nicer guy, but we were shooting in New Orleans, walking down the street with Batch. He was stopped every 2 seconds.
Whoa.
Yeah.
All right, I'm on
And
him.
It wasn't for his movies. Like,
no.
People like his movies, but it was for like his internet presence.
Yeah. He doesn't even have a ASICS.TV is his link.
I don't even know what that is.
It's he's selling shoes. I guess. This is interesting. Literally linking straight to an ASICS.
What? It's wild.
That's weird. Why wouldn't I guess maybe now you can buy the URL. Like that, someone must have been like, "Yo, we want your URL." Because I mean, that's well. Anyway,
it's really interesting to see the paradigm shift in, you know, from movies in theatrical movies. It's really hard unless you're Disney,
right?
Or you have a really interesting horror movie like A Quiet Place or Get Out,
right?
It's really tough to fill seats. Like it has to be an experience worth going to, to drive somewhere on their set time, pay right. for parking, pay for food, pay for your ticket.
Dude, I can afford all that shit. I have free tickets to the movies. I have 20 free movie tickets to the theater on Crescent Heights and Sunset.
Would you rather watch it on Netflix?
I'm not going. I haven't exactly. been there in a year.
Yeah.
I would rather pay $20 on iTunes to watch it in my fucking bed.
Convenience is so undervalued by most people.
Well, I don't even leave the house anymore. Exactly. I haven't left the house in 2 days. I'm not kidding.
I can tell.
I do. No, I do Instacart.
Instacart.
Right? The food gets delivered. Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Amazon everything.
Amazon everything?
Yeah.
Amazon now. I've postmated a gift. I had to buy someone a present because I was going to go see them in person, and I postmated a gift, like a pottery vase or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you can postmate anything.
It's great.
Anyway, yeah, you're right. I mean, so how do you think? So as a person who's a producer, an actor, and you know, you're at this right age, right? You're in between, like you said, YouTube generation and kind of Netflix generation. They're there and going to the theater. What do you do? What's next for you? You've got all these things, but then what do you? What's the next? Can you share the next idea?
I don't know.
You're like it's an online bookstore, and I'm like, wait a minute.
I think movies will continue to have their place in theaters for like the $200 million movies, like the Star Wars movies,
The Rock,
the Marvel movies, movies starring huge, huge, huge stars. But at the same time, Chris Hemsworth, who is as big a star as you can get, has trouble opening a movie that's not Thor or Avengers.
Whoa.
And it's not his fault. The movies can be good, but it's a movie that most people would rather watch at home. And like, if you give me like the best movie out there and you're like, hey, you can go see this in the theaters or you can watch it at home on, you know, your TV. You can pause it if you need to go to the bathroom. You want to order some food. Yeah.
No one's going to cough or laugh or yell.
Exactly. What if you get stuck beside someone who just stinks? Or is like a big mouth breather.
Or can't seem to figure out how to get the Skittles out of that crinkly bag.
Right.
That to me, like that on a plane, I'm almost like, I need a new seat. This person needs to get the Skittle out of the bag because it's crinkling.
It's completely off topic, but my wife and I were on a plane and this woman pulled out her salad to eat that she brought on the plane that she had made herself.
Oh, God.
Hard-boiled eggs.
No.
I couldn't believe it.
That's intense.
I couldn't believe it. She cracked these things open and I was like, I look at my wife. I'm like, what?
We're on a plane.
Are you out of your mind?
Yeah.
My dad would have freaked out.
He would have gotten direct.
Oh, yeah.
See, I admire a guy like that. Like, because she needs to be
able to... You get to a certain age and you just say whatever you want.
You become Larry David. Yeah. Because she needs to be made aware that, like...
That's not okay.
There's 150 people on this thing.
Yeah.
And you're the only one who's eating eggs.
And at least the 40 in your immediate vicinity are really shitty about this.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah.
That is bad.
People are going to be like, where'd the golf go?
Yeah, ironically, in Robbie's attempt to not do Joe Rogan, we've come close. We're at 82 minutes. We're gonna shut it down, dude. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. This was fun.
Everyone, go there in the description here. We'll have links to everything we discussed. Obviously, Robbie's Instagram. Are you on? Is that your main Instagram, right?
Yeah, I'm Instagram and Twitter. Yeah. Facebook, I don't use very much anymore.
I don't even know what it is.
Yeah,
I heard it was started at Harvard. Might have been Stanford. I can't remember.
But the crazy thing is, young people don't use Facebook anymore.
They don't. Now Facebook's for old people.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's for my aunt.
It's so weird.
They get real political.
Things change so quickly.
Yeah. Dude, I'm looking forward to hanging with you.
Me too. Play some golf.
We're gonna figure it out together. All right, everybody. Have a great week. And like I said, check everybody out in the description here. Thanks.